At Wonders and Worries, our check-ins involve a read on our mind, body, and spirit. In our care of families, we are looking at the whole person and believe that our wellness comes not just from physical health, but from mental and spiritual health as well. In living healthy, we must focus on all three aspects of our nature and find the space to cultivate that balance in our lives. Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. WonderCast is made available by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. In today's conversation, we visit with the Reverend Kristen Braun, local Episcopal priest, to discuss spirituality, faith, and finding meaning in difficult times. Listen in as she unpacks common questions and struggles that people have with their faith in times of medical crisis and the incredible support chaplains can be in the healthcare setting. This is Kristen.
Hi, I'm so happy to be with you today. I am the Reverend Kristen Braun. I work at St. David's Episcopal Church in downtown Austin. I am in charge of children and family ministries there, and I have just finished my curacy and have been ordained for a hot minute, but I've been at St. David's for the 2 years of my curacy, and now I am a full-fledged assistant rector at that parish.
Such a cool old building, yes.
It really is. 175 years old. We just celebrated our 175th birthday, and it is steeped in all sorts of Austin goodness and historic. You can feel the spirit inside the building, and the parish is really wise and faithful and consistent, and it is a really amazing place to be. For St. David's now, I am in charge of all of the formational aspects of children's programming. And I add families because it's important to me, but technically that's pretty new. The church really forms adults and forms children, but we have kind of an awkward space where families are not necessarily formed together, which you and I know is super important. It is really great to be an adult. It's really great to be a child, but when you mush children and adults together in a small space that we call the household, things get a little bit wacky and people get frustrated even on a good day. And so we need help in how to be spiritually aware and care for one another in the best possible ways. And so as time goes, this is a new role for me there. I was in charge of advocacy previously, which I dearly love also, but I'm super happy to be back in the family space. It will give me an opportunity to reach families in a place and in a way that we've been remiss. So there are days, you know, that families have to deal with really awful things, and we don't know what to do. And we as parents often feel a failing when it comes to dealing with something really critical and difficult. We don't know how to show up for our kids. Our kids are confused. They ask questions that we can't answer. So I feel like it's really important that we come together as a community and build some education and formation in that space.
You're taught early on in social situations, try to avoid talking about politics and religion. Yeah. Really and truly, what you said about the messiness of life, I feel like spirituality is at the root of so much of our very existence. And so to discredit it, I feel like is really discrediting a lifeline for some of these families that could use that extra spiritual support for their healing. I would love, if you're comfortable today, to kind of share what you know about spirituality and how that can support healing.
Absolutely. I would be happy to. The structure of the church is 2,000 years old, plus give or take, right? And then if you include Judaism, it's way older than that. So we have a long history of words and ways to deal with grief that non-secular folks don't have, or secular folks have, right? What I can say about spirituality, no matter what kind of faith practices you have, the thing that is really beautiful about spirituality is that you're asked to remove yourself and your ego and your fear from the equation And there's a structure and a way for you to do that, right? In Christianity and in Judaism, it's prayer. For the Muslim faith, it's also prayer. For some spiritual practices, it's meditation, right? For some folks, there's chanting or singing. There are ways to be present with your spirit that ask you to forego whatever's happening to you in the concrete, real space that you're living. Now, in the Christian faith, you know, we believe that heaven is very real and very present for us. In the Episcopal faith, we believe that we have a great cloud of witnesses. That's what we call all of the people that passed on before us, all of the saints and all of the beings. And all of those folks, let's say, are in heaven. But that heaven is not a thing that's up in the sky. Right. I have a dear friend who is 5 and he recently lost his grandfather and he was very frustrated and angry that heaven was not up in the sky. He told me he's really angry that his grandfather's gone and he knows that he will never see him again. And he's super, super upset because he has been in an airplane and he knows that heaven is not up there. He's like, I've been up there. I looked out the window. There were no people. There were no animals. You said the animals go there. That is a lie. He was very angry and very clear. And I think that's really beautiful. And I said, you know what, bud, you're right. That's because it's not up there. And he was shocked, right? He was shocked. The truth about the Episcopal faith is that we believe that all of those folks are here, maybe just in a way that you can't perceive. But we have all heard of sort of angel experiences or times where people have felt things or felt a hug. And that's what we believe heaven is. It is possible for heaven to break in right here to where we live, but that it's really difficult for us to perceive it because we live in a postmodern world. The beauty of the church is that we can discuss that. And when you come up for communion every Sunday, we call down the Spirit to the altar. And the goal is that you arrive at the altar and you are surrounded by all of these beautiful beings and that we all commune in that one moment together. That's really handy. When it comes to grief and pain and the struggling and the suffering of this day and age that we live in, there's the promise that even when we're not here anymore, I have chills just talking about it, that we get to be in contact and be connected to those folks who have gone before us. And the promise is that we will get to go also. Those of us who are sensitive to it and willing to talk will tell you that connection is real and that it's there. If you're open and willing to feel it, it's very comforting.
I've seen in the hospital environment and all my years of child life there, the role that chaplaincy, a community that is of a church family that can come and support a family, how comforting that can be. As a spiritual leader in your community, do you find that people are very open to come and seek you out and talk to you about hardships or medical things happening in their life?
You know, your mileage may vary. Some people are very, very private. You know, it used to be that your priest would come see you in the hospital or as soon as the baby was born, or you'd be there for, I don't know, 17 days. I don't know. People used to stay in the hospital for so long. And now they're like, great, you're all good. Go home. You're like, Can I get a drink of water first? You just don't get to stay there very long. So sometimes people are private and we at the church will find out like 3 or 4 days after someone has suffered a major, major breakdown, illness of some sort, a heart attack, a stroke. And it's heartbreaking because our goal as chaplains or priests specifically is to come and pray with you and be with you and anoint you and to recognize the suffering and the struggle that you're feeling and to pray for you in a way that certainly asks for your recovery, but we also pray in a way that asks for you to be given the strength and courage you need to get through whatever this moment is. And then the assumption then, right, is that we're going to continue to check on you. And we do that, but that we're going to check on your family and we're going to send people who can support them at home and bring them food if they need it and pray for you at church and let the wider community know that your family is struggling with a thing. And then if something happens the week later or a week later or a week later, we know your family has been in crisis recently and that we are still keeping an eye on you. So we're going to have one ear sort of to the ground, listening for other things that might come after that. And then we're going to just keep being present with you. That sort of built-in community is honestly the best part of church. As church sort of ebbs and flows your faith, the church it is always there. But you don't have to have a church in order to have a chaplain, right? Every major hospital, there is at least one chaplain on call. Usually during the daytime, there are 5 or 6 or 7 chaplains on call. And those folks are not, they're not any one faith. Chaplains are trained in a very rigorous year-long program. They have 4 units of continuing education on chaplaincy. And they are prepared to meet you in whatever faith or non-faith practice that you want to be a part of. So they will show up for you in any way that you need them to. Also, chaplains will sort of liaise between and advocate with you for you with hospital staff. They also can put in place a medical power of attorney. They can lead you to paperwork where you can get more powers of attorney started if that is what you need. They decide next of kin. If you lose someone in the hospital, they're the ones that show up for you and walk you through the funeral arrangements and how to get connected with a funeral home. They are a wealth of information and just really compassionately love to sit with people when they're struggling. If you're a person that's willing to lay all of that out there, chaplains and priests are super willing to pick it up and just hold it with you because it's heavy. We are oddly equipped to love that.
It's a gift. I know. It really is a special calling. I think there are a lot of misconceptions about chaplaincy in general. I think people, when they're in the hospital, there's this common worry that they're not of my faith, or they're going to try to convert me, or they're going to try to save my soul. I really would love for you to kind of build upon that, talk on a little bit about maybe some of the misconceptions that you have navigated or seen firsthand just through your interactions with families.
Absolutely. The first thing that happens when I walk into someone's room, I can be serving as a chaplain in any capacity, not just as an Episcopal priest. If I walk in the room, they're automatically like, oh God, I'm dying. Like, no. No, we're not here because you're dying. We're here because we love you and we want to know, do you need more pillows? Do you want me to hold your hand? Have you eaten today? Can I call your mom? Like, these are the things that we do, right?
Yes.
We do the things that I think nurses used to do and now do not have time for. We are your friend. We are your kind, loving face who will just play cards with you if you need company. Most chaplains aren't churchgoers, actually. I think a lot of chaplains started out that way, and then now they don't have time. But in all of those 4 credits that they're required to get to be a chaplain, they cover every single different faith practice. And then they also cover atheism. They cover the differences in medical treatment between different races and ethnicities, right? Folks who have been refugees, folks who need trauma-informed care. Like, all of those different shades of caring and social work are very much a part of the chaplaincy training. You'll see chaplains who are Baptists. You'll see chaplains who are non-denominational, Unitarian, Episcopalian, but also just people, and they will never convert you. That's part of the agreement. That is part of the agreement. You actually are really not allowed to do that.
And it's free. That's what we tell people. I think a lot of families worry just about, especially if they are living in maybe a financially stressful situation or have ongoing hospitalizations or ongoing treatments. I feel like they're very resistant to take these extra things to take care of themselves. And they're not recognizing these extra things that we call are actually essential. It's essential care and wellness.
It is.
And it's free. It's not an added expense to your hospital bill. This is somebody who has chosen this profession to serve and to take care
of. Absolutely. And the hospital pays them, right? Like, the hospital has recognized that people get well faster if we are caring for them holistically, if we are caring for their bodies and their minds and their spirits all at the same time. So typically when I walk into a room and someone gives me the side eye because they're not sure why I'm there, I say, these folks, these doctors and nurses that are here, they're here for your body. I'm here for your spirit. And I want to know how your spirit is doing today. How are you today? You know, when you're in the hospital and people ask you every day, like, how are you today? Well, I'm not good. I'm in the hospital, right? That's how
Correct.
You answer. So when the chaplain comes in and says, hey, I'm just here for your spirit. How's it going today? And my face is going to look like, I mean, I know it's not good. So Do we want to scream today? Do we want to cry today? Do we need some sunshine today?
If we have somebody that's listening that maybe has not been feeding their spirit in a long time, or maybe feeling very depleted in that area of their care, how do you recommend them building or rebuilding some of that foundational care of self?
That's a really good question. I think the most important thing that we need to do to care for ourselves is to take stock, particularly before we begin a new practice, is to take stock of where we've been and kind of what our spiritual baggage is, right? In the same way that when we talk about sort of recovering in a racial system, we have to take stock of what our biases are. I think it's the same with spirituality. We have to think about who raised us, what environment we were raised in, and what sort of baggage we have, different forms of Christianity or different sorts of faith practices and religions, right? Because before we begin, we need to know where we stand. Once we have that in place, and then we start to explore, if I explore something and decide, I really hate this, it is not for me, I don't know that I can make a fair assessment of it being good for me if it's maybe that I'm triggered because of something that has happened to me in the past. You can access God in any number of ways, and you can access a higher power or the universe or love in the same kind of ways. So if in a very careful, trauma-informed way, I will say, if you have been traumatized by a faith practice in the past, I do not recommend that you go back there, except to say, this is how I was harmed, and I want to avoid that thing, because then it won't be nurturing or fulfilling. It will be painful, right? And so we get into a place of should. I should be more religious. I should be more faithful, when what you should be is recognizing that you're loved, right? And that's it. So I think from a spiritual standpoint, if we can walk into a space or a place or a practice where we feel love and can access love and then come out of it calmer and more happy, even for a moment, then that's the faith practice or spiritual practice that we want to keep going back to. And then you can build on it and build on it and build on it.
If you are looking at just some gentle practices, maybe to start putting into your every single day, to just start building that openness to spirituality, I don't know if there's a certain practice that some of our listeners could maybe even start from their own home without having to venture out and seek other people.
That is what I would recommend, is starting in your own home. I always recommend doing a thing that has like a woo factor, like light a candle and sit down and pray for 1 minute. Make it small, make it feel beautiful, and then do that one thing consistently, right? And then slowly you will start to build, because you can go back there to that little bitty small space that you've created. So I would not recommend that you decide to journal every morning when you wake up for 300 words, right?
No,
you're just not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And I'm a priest, for crying out loud. It's too hard. So pick one thing, right? Like, get a favorite mug and decide that every morning when you brew your tea — I'm a tea drinker — every morning when I brew my tea, while I'm waiting for the water to boil, I'm just going to stand there and breathe slowly. And then when the thing beeps, I'm going to pour my tea and I'm going to move on with my life. Right? That's simple. It's already built in. I have the instant, the moment every morning that I'm going to click that button on the water boiler and it's going to boil. I know I'm doing that every day regardless. So I'm just going to build in that little moment right there when I do it.
I love that. And I feel like if you do that enough and start to feel success with that, I would have to assume that you'll be open to even more as you continue to heal and grow.
Absolutely. I have a guide one time that told me, if you want to create a habit of going to the gym, then go to the gym every day for 30 minutes, but don't go in. Just walk there, park your car, get out, walk up to the door and touch the door, and then get back in your car and leave. And then maybe the next month you'll put on your workout clothes. Honestly, that is the barrier, isn't it? It's like getting in your car and going over there. That's the part that I don't want to do.
Correct. just the whole concept of setting a tiny space to be intentional with a candle or be intentional with breathing. It sounds so simple, but sometimes that is just the hardest beginning, especially when we're going through something difficult, like an illness or supporting someone we love through an illness. I feel like you don't allow yourself to make tiny little windows of care for your own spirit.
Absolutely. The other thing I dearly love is leaving a note for myself, like evening self, right? Morning self has very different goals than evening self has.
Yes,
right?
Correct.
Holy moly, am I tired by the time I get home? And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot I was going to XYZ at midnight. That's what I'm thinking. I forgot I was going to, oh. So have morning self leave notes for evening self, or have evening self leave a note for morning self and say, hey, you really wanted to work out this morning. Don't go work out. I'm not saying work out as the example. That's a terrible example because
no,
so hard. And we're talking about spirituality. So let's get back to that.
Yes.
I think leave a note and say, don't forget to light your candle in the morning. It smells really good. That's it.
That's it.
I feel like anyone would happily just light a candle.
I can answer this as a child life specialist, but I'm just so curious about your scope in the field that you are. Just when you have somebody that is going through loss or tremendous difficulty, maybe in their health or in their marriage or in their finances, all the things, do you find that there are common questions that you get from those people as they're starting to question why this is happening?
I do. Mostly what I hear from people is that they feel like they're not doing it right. Like, I'm going through this thing and I feel like I'm losing my faith. I'm like, what do you mean you feel like you're losing your faith? Well, I just feel like I'm not doing this well. Like, I'm irritated. I'm like, well, you're not supposed to like it. No one said you were supposed to like it, right? The one that I get often is, I feel fear of dying. And so I feel like that means I'm questioning my faith. As if, honestly, Julie, as if there weren't all of these beautiful people that you love here on earth, like you're supposed to want to go.
Yeah.
I have such compassion for that. And I feel so sad when people feel that way, because I don't view it as a lack of faith. I feel it as a great presence of love for what we've created here in this place. Now, as a faith leader, I would be remiss if I didn't say, hey, if I believe in what I'm saying, if I believe in what I preach, it should be better after this place. But that does not mean that I want you to rush there. And that does not mean that I think you can't create a beautiful life here while you're here. Because I think that we're also here to smell all of the things and to eat the things and to hug the people and to spread as much joy and care as we can, to go to summer camp, to dig in dirt. I think these are things that we are supposed to experience as human beings, and we get to do that while we're here. And I highly recommend that everyone does it. Light the candle and smell it. It is what we're here to do. And when it is our time to go, I hope that we fight. I hope that we fight to stay here with the people who love us, because they will miss us terribly. And then as your faith leader, I will also say, it's going to be okay when you get to the other side. And I know you don't believe that, and you don't have to. I'll believe it for you until you get there. So that's the hardest thing I think that I hear. The other thing that I hear is, I call this the mirrored space. What I hear is usually from family members who will say, oh, Julie's really having a hard time because she feels like X, Y, and Z. Okay, well, I'm glad that you told me how Julie feels, but I think that's probably how you feel, right? Or you can easily see in other people what you yourself feel, those things that are mirrored back to you. And so I don't usually bother to tell you those things. Like, I can see that you feel that way, but I do take it as an indication that you and Julie may be suffering the same thing. And so I'm going to treat it that way, right? We're having a crisis of faith. We are at a loss for what to do with what's happening at home. I feel like I can't be present for my kids. I don't know what to tell them, how much to tell them, how little to tell them. Then honestly, when parents ask me questions like that, I send them to you.
Aw, nuts.
Right? I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but it is, you are so good at it. And the thing is, what we tell them I think what you probably tell them also is there's no easy way to do this.
And there's no one way to do it. I think that right. is, I think that is something that is a bane of social media, is a bane of the internet, right? We can see other families living along their end of life treatments or their cancer journeys and, you know, they're thriving, which who thrives in cancer? It's not a thriving. It's not. But that's what they see. And that's right. the model that they feel like they are failing at.
Yes.
And that is so heavy to carry. And that is so harmful for your spirit. I think that would harm my spirit tremendously.
Absolutely.
To feel like I have to keep this standard that isn't even a reality.
Yeah. Well, and there's also this, like, there's this, oh, this Christian baggage that is like, oh, am I being punished because I did something wrong? Right? I mean, I do right now, it's summertime. So we're doing Brick Bible in Sunday school and we're building Lego scenes from the Bible stories. And they're uber realistic, which is really great. So I asked the kids, when they're building, it's this really great space where they're focused on something else and I can slip in questions and they'll tell me the truth, right? And so I asked them one day, like, do you think that God killed all of the people outside of the ark because they were really awful? And they said, yeah. Well, I mean, that's what the story said. I'm like, you're right. That's what the story says. You know, sometimes in the Bible, the words that we read are really super harsh. And I don't know if that's really what God believed or that's what the authors and editors believed that God believed. Right? So that's complicated. I'm like, so do you think that if you're really well behaved, that God will give you good things? And all the kids are like, yes. Oh, what a drag. I'm like, so do you think that if you're really bad, that God will punish you with awful things? Yeah. I'm like, oh God.
Like, no.
I mean, that is what's pervasive in our society, right? That is, if you were alive in the 80s and 90s, that's what HIV was believed to be. A punishment to gay people. Talk about trauma. Awful, awful. So any adult older than 50 is sort of programmed by our American society to believe that we are punished when we are bad. And some of that punishment is illness. And Job's suffering was a result of Job being tested by God. So we think that we are being tested. Right? Those are things that people believe all the time. So one of the things that I really work to do when I visit people in the hospital is say, you know what? There's a whole lot of things in this world that humans have created that then we suffer from. Vehicles, high fructose corn syrup, microplastics, sunscreens that may screen you from the sun, but not from other kinds of skin damage. You know, like we have created so many struggles. I don't know that we can say that God really put them there. So what I can say is about God is that when you're suffering and struggling in this hospital, God will be with you. And that's what I want to establish for you. That's what I want to make sure you notice. I want to make sure that you notice and start to feel your community and your God buoying you in this space where you very much need support and cannot hold it all on your own. So let's do that. And let's remind you, your promise as a Christian is that God will never, ever, ever leave you and that you can never, ever, ever be separated by the love of God. And I believe that is true in Judaism, and I believe that is true in the Muslim faith, and I believe that is true in every variety of Christian faith. That is promised in the Bible, and it's promised in baptism. So that's just not me as an Episcopal priest, right? That is real universal.
I think also more than anything, if people can hopefully take from what you're saying is it's okay if you don't know where you stand with your faith, just
absolutely.
It doesn't mean that you are less than or undeserving or inadequate. It just means it's where you are.
Yes.
In your journey.
Bad things happen to good people. It is unfortunate and I hate it.
It's the worst.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like your lot in life. It is just a thing that you have to suffer. I think that suffering is as universal as love, which is just real rotten. But, you know, it's like the yin and the yang, the lightness and the darkness. It's like you can't have one without the other, right? And breathing is really underrated.
I want to be very mindful of your time. Is there anything else that you feel like I didn't ask or you wanted to share?
Teaching spirituality to children is super, super crucial. So if you're a person who has kids in your house, even if you're not a person of faith or you're not going to be a family that goes to church, it's super essential, I think, to help your children by understanding yourself, what your source is. What is the source of your energy and your love and your care? Where do you get that when you're feeling depleted? For some of us, it's church. For some of us, it's, like I said, meditation. For some of us, we just inherently know. But some people don't inherently know. And so if we don't talk to our children about it, we aren't people who go to church or temple, then our kids may grow up not knowing how to access that themselves. And that we do them a really big disservice if we don't teach them that they're part of a greater being, right? And I was a biologist first, so I will say, even if you teach them about the biological world and the cycle of water and how things are all connected, I think that's enough too. But it's really crucial that we all understand that we are all connected in some way. Super crucial that we understand how interconnected we all are, and that we teach our kids that they can plug into something like an electrical socket and replenish themselves when they are struggling. And whatever that is for your family, teach them that, because they will then take it and expound upon it like we do with everything else. And what you'll be teaching them is that they can get more and more and more of what they need from whatever source that is, and that they will not ever be empty. The last thing I want to say is that one of the things that you and I have talked about is how to support people when they are suffering. I wanted to just touch on that and say, I think we all know in this day and age that platitudes are terrible, right? But I also want to say, I think it's okay to be really honest with people and say, this thing that you're dealing with really sucks, and I'm really sorry that you're going through it. I also want to say that there are lots of ways that we can accidentally use platitudes that maybe we don't mean to say, like, I can't even imagine what you're going through. When I hear someone say that, I want to say, could you try? Could you try to imagine? Just imagine for 2 minutes what it might be like to be suffering, right? Some of us are empaths, and it's really a devastating way to live. You can feel
it is. It's a heavy world.
A little terrible. And so that's the empath in me saying, just try to imagine. Imagine. I can imagine it. It must be awful. I can imagine you're terrified. Don't be afraid to say those things, because you'll make someone cry, or because you'll remind them of what they're going through. Because I want to tell you that I guarantee you they've already cried that day. And I guarantee you they're not going to forget for one single minute that they're going through this awful thing.
Validation can go so far, and comfort.
Absolutely.
We just have to make ourselves vulnerable. And I feel like that is something that is missing from so many people that try to mean well with the words they say.
Absolutely. So go ahead and bring it up and say, if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay. But I want to let you know, I've been thinking about how much you're suffering, and I really love you. And I know it is really hard.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back, as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.